Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey guys, it's Andrew Porter here. Thanks a lot for listening and subscribing and rating my podcast, Wired This Way. I really appreciate all the feedback. I'm glad everyone is enjoying the episodes so far. This week's episode is one of my favorites. It's with a guy that I've been working with for the better part of 6 years now, someone who I've become really good friends with, just an awesome guy, Ike Reese.
Being able to do what I've been doing the past 10 years, sometimes I'm more proud and more satisfied than I did what I did with my athletic career.
From 94 WIP in Philadelphia, it's Wired This Way. Life stories about the people in sports, the choices they've made, and how they've achieved their success. I'm Andrew Porter. Most Philadelphia sports fans know Ike Reese as number 58 in Midnight Green. The former Pro Bowl, All-Pro, and NFC champion Eagles linebacker has endeared himself to the city of Philadelphia, which he has called home for the last decade plus. He's one of the best players to ever play for Michigan State, and now he's become an accomplished veteran radio host on the afternoon show with John Marks on Sports Radio 94 WIP in Philadelphia. But Ike has overcome plenty throughout his life in order to get to this point, including losing his father as a young child and then dropping out of school not once but nearly twice. Ike has lived a fascinating life with many ups, many downs, and many chapters. That life begins in Jacksonville, North Carolina on October 16th, 1973.
Yeah, man, Jacksonville, North Carolina. My father was in the Marines, so I was born on the naval base Camp Lejeune in wow. Jacksonville, North Carolina.
And siblings?
Yeah, I got four brothers. Second of the crew. So three younger brothers, one older brother. Yep.
And did your father pass away when you were young?
Yeah. So yeah, when I was I must have been about 3 or 4 years old, I believe. And, yeah, he passed away, man. Had a heart attack while playing basketball.
So, wow.
Yeah. And so he died when I was very young.
Did your brothers play sports as well?
Or? Oh, yeah, we all played sports coming up. I was just I'm the only one that made it out of high school playing.
Okay.
Some of them didn't even make it in the high school plan, but as kids, yeah, we all played sports. No video games. Mother couldn't afford any video games, really. So, you know, the way you entertained yourself was you were at the playground, you're at the rec center, boys and girls club, you know. So with all boys, you know, we found ways to keep ourselves entertained, and sports was a big part of it, which made us very competitive with each other. And if we ever needed a team to take on someone else,
right,
you know, neighborhood or what have you, we had enough guys.
Did you have anyone to kind of guide you through sports, or was it on your own, watching it and just your brothers?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, with I had coaches here and there,
right.
But you know, I was in and out of different sports. You know, I didn't play little league football. You know, I didn't play little league football. I played little league baseball, played basketball, but didn't play football. Played football like in the neighborhoods, but never really played tackle football with equipment.
But always watched the NFL.
Oh yeah. Always been a big fan of the game. Really, shoot, since about 1980, I would say 79 or 80. Well, when the Bengals first went to the Super Bowl in 1980 against the 49ers in Pontiac, Michigan. I think that was 1980. Was 81. Either way. No, the Eagles went to the Super Bowl in 80.
Right.
So I think we were, the Bengals were 82. Sorry about that. See, I can't even remember. That's how long ago it was.
Right. So you're playing everything, school, like, was school a big priority for you as well? Or you were kind of just like...
Yeah, school, you know, school with me was hit or miss.
Right.
You know, I went to school. I was never a bookworm, per se. Not because I didn't have the ability to be a bookworm. I just didn't have the motivation and the drive. School was hit or miss for me at times. Not until I got in high school late that I started taking school serious.
In 10th grade, Ike Rees actually faced a crossroads in his life, eventually dropping out of high school and then re-enrolling in a school much farther away, something that could have changed the trajectory of his life forever. Now, Wikipedia says you transfer from Woodward to Aiken.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, actually dropped out.
Oh, really?
School, yeah, dropped
out
of school.
But they're both in Cincinnati.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, dropped out of school in the 10th grade, man, and... went back the following year. I just didn't finish that year, 10th grade up, but went back the following year. That's when I went to another school on the other side of town where I could sort of get away from people
friends.
In my neighborhood,
yeah.
Friends, you know, that type of thing. So went to a school on the other side of town where I had to catch two buses.
Wow.
To get there. I got up at least 2.5 hours early.
Who
just
motivated you to do that? One of your brothers or yourself?
I think after you know, dropping out in the 10th grade, I just realized, you know, that wasn't really me, and I wanted to do something. I wanted to get involved with something. So, you know, just decided to go back. And the funny thing is I had my basketball coach at Aiken High School, Eric Thomas. He saw me. The summer of, I believe it was 90, I believe it was 90 or 91, at a rec playing basketball. And he had remembered me from when I was 9 years old playing basketball. He was used to be one of the officials in the youth league. So he had remembered me, from back then and just was asking me what was I into now? What are you doing? And really, he got me to come to Aiken High School. You know, he got me to come to Aiken High School. And I told him what I had been doing, pretty much nothing. And he was like, man, you need to come out here with us. And so once I got there, I finally got into a little bit of a routine and a home being at that school. So, you know, that's what kind of helped me out.
And you're playing basketball and football at this time?
No, I didn't play football until my junior year.
Okay.
So I didn't play football until my junior year.
How did that transpire?
The football coach saw me walking through the hallways and was just like, you know, why don't you come out for the team next year? Because we didn't have very many players on the team.
I mean, you were big?
No, I wasn't big, but I think he felt like I was big enough that he could use the body somewhere out there. So, you know, when you're a high school football coach and you're trying to get kids to come out for the team,
right.
You're basically looking around the school for kids with size, and then you're like, well, what are you doing? You know, what are you doing with your life? You know what I mean? So why don't you come on out for the team? And that's what he did with me. He was our gym teacher too, so he got a chance to see me and see how athletic I was just by being in his gym class. And he was just like, man, you got to come out next year. Why don't you come out next year? And I was like, yeah, you know, whatever, I will. Not really thinking that I was. And I don't know what it was that summer that just told me to go to training camp, told me to go in and report. You know, I don't know what it was.
Never played organized football.
No, I had
so
never
just,
played.
You're putting a helmet on and just going.
Right. Always, you know what the funny thing is? I always wondered and thought what it would be like. Because I was a bigger football fan.
Right.
You know what I mean? So watching the game, my favorite players or what have you, I always wondered what it would be like. I just didn't think I had what it took to go through training camp, two-a-days, hit, equipment, all that stuff. I'm like, I'm a basketball player.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm trying to get my Michael Jordan on, my Dominique Wilkins, my Magic Johnson.
Were you playing well basketball?
Yeah. So, you know, and
so are you thinking college at this point, or this is too early?
No, I'm just happy to be playing. Yeah. I'm just happy to be playing. And because I wasn't one of the best players on the team, I probably was fourth or fifth. I was good enough to be a starter, but wasn't necessarily we had better players. We had a couple guys that were flat out basketball players. So he must have, you know, seen us playing, and he's like, okay, he's the defensive guy on the team, the rebounder on the team. So he's the guy that may be tough enough to actually play football. So he asked me to come out, and I came out.
And where did he put you, like, position wise?
Mike Brown was his name too, matter of fact.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you know Preston Brown, a linebacker, used to be with the Buffalo Bills?
No, but it sounds familiar.
Yeah, Preston Brown, he played at Louisville. His dad, I remember Preston Brown when he was a baby. That's his dad was my high school coach.
And so where did he throw you at? Like
Tight end, and we ran a 3-4, so it was like outside linebacker, defensive end, outside linebacker. But we ran the, you may be too young for this to remember this, we ran the run and shoot. So we ran the run and shoot in high school. So that's four wide receivers, one running back.
Oh, wow.
And quarterback, yeah. So I happen to be one of the inside receivers.
Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought I was like Jerry Rice, Chris Carter, all those guys, Sterling Sharp.
Right. So Michigan State saw you had rock hands and put you at
right. Yeah. But the funny so thing, yeah, that? Yeah.
Talk about the recruiting situation.
Right. Well, the funny thing with the recruiting thing is, you know, I played my junior year, and I wasn't all that. I mean, I wasn't great. I don't even think I made all city or anything like that. You know, I mean, I've gotten honorable mention, district, all district, something like that. But
not to the point where you were thinking about college heading into your
senior year. No, I still hadn't thought about college, man. I still hadn't thought about it, man. I was just having fun playing. It was my first year playing, so I'm just playing. And it's funny because the guy who was recruiting me, Kip Waddell, he had coached my older brother in high school at a different high school. And so he had took a job at Michigan State as the D-line coach, and he was in charge of the Cincinnati area, southern Ohio, southwestern Ohio area, recruiting-wise. And so he was actually – the game he noticed me in was a game he was actually there to see someone else play on the other team. So the other team we were playing against, Western Hills, they had several good players on the team. And so – but they were our homecoming. And I don't know why we would schedule them as our homecoming. They were one of the best teams in the city. So they wound up beating the brakes off of us. But I had a good game that game.
And on defense?
On offense.
On offense,
yeah. And you know what? When I was in high school, I made tackles on defense. You know, I think I had maybe a couple of sacks or whatever. But I didn't see myself as a defensive player. I was like most kids. Right. I saw myself as an offensive player.
You want to score.
Yeah, throw me the damn ball. You know what I mean? Yeah, let me get in the end zone. So it's funny, I had a good game that game, and that's how he noticed me. He was there to see kids from the other team, actually one of the guys who wound up being my best friend, as we all wound up going to Michigan State. But that's how he saw me. And so
what did he say? Like, did he come up to you?
No, he couldn't come up to me at that game.
Okay.
I didn't even know that they were recruiting me until the following offseason, to the following spring. You know, I can remember. I can still remember the first three letters I ever got from a college. You know, it was Ohio State, Boston College, and UCLA. Just questionnaires.
Wow.
But
is that's when it hit you? Like, oh, this
right?
Is
yeah, I was like, oh man, yeah. I'm getting letters from Ohio State. You know, I grew up a Buckeye fan, right. So any kid in Ohio, you grow up a Buckeye fan. So I'm like, whoa, Ohio State. You know, and being naive and not really knowing back then, questionnaire that was like they were offering me a scholarship and I didn't even realize it. They just wanted the information, height, weight, all that type of stuff for me. So yeah, but those are my first three letters. And but yeah, man, it was funny because I wasn't eligible to play the following year, and that's why I only played 1 year in high school.
Okay.
So I wasn't eligible to play my senior year.
Okay.
Because I'd already been in high school 4 years,
right?
So and all the schools that were recruiting me dropped off, except for four schools, except for Michigan State, Illinois, University of Cincinnati, where John Harbaugh was my recruiter. I've been knowing John Harbaugh since I was 17 years old.
Wow.
And who did I say? Oh, and Ball State, because that's where my high school coach went to college at Ball State. So
that's like, those are four pretty good programs.
Oh, yeah.
That was not a slam dunk choice, yeah. Right? Like, mm-hmm. how was that process? Did you talk to people or, like, why Michigan State?
This funny thing is it would have been Illinois because one of my high school teammates wound up going to Illinois and another kid that we played against in high school. So, like, we were all good friends from Cincinnati. So those two guys wound up going to Illinois the year before me. And so I would talk to them all throughout their freshman year in college. And my senior year, when I wasn't even playing, they helped me get through that time of not being able to play, not being eligible to play. So, but the school wouldn't offer me the scholarship. You know, they didn't offer it. We were waiting on someone else not to take the scholarship in order to offer me one. And Cincinnati, I wanted to get out of Cincinnati.
Right.
You know what I mean? I just wanted to get out of Cincinnati to go somewhere else. But they were on me big time. John Harbaugh wanted me. They offered the scholarship. He wasn't happy when I didn't take the scholarship. And Ball State, I was like, so it's between Ball State and Michigan State.
Right.
And I'm like, Big Ten. I'm in Big Ten. You know, every kid wants to be in the Big Ten in the Midwest. So I just the first visit I took to Michigan State, when I took my first official visit, now mind you, I had visits still remaining with those other three schools. My first official visit, I committed the second day I was there. So you would get there on a Friday night, and you really don't even meet the coaches that Friday night. You have a dinner. I guess you meet some of them. But the next day is really the day you get the tour of the campus, the football complex, all that stuff. But you have a host. So you have somebody from the team who's your host that night, and he takes you out, meet the other guys. Typically, you find yourself at a party somewhere. He's right. Going to take you out somewhere or what have you. I had so much fun that first night, man. And next day, by the time I got to sit down with George Perlis, you know, you get to meet the head coach, he calls you in the office, and you get to sit down, and he talks to you, whatever. I'm like, Coach, I'm coming. Right. I'm like, I'm here. And they hadn't even offered the scholarship really yet. But I was like, I'm good. I'm in.
Ike had tremendous success at Michigan State, playing under George Perlis in 1994 and then Nick Saban from 95 to 97. Ike became one of the best ever to wear the white and green. He finished his college career with 420 tackles, 10 sacks, 3 interceptions, 4 forced fumbles, and 5 fumble recoveries. But what I didn't know was that his success didn't happen immediately. In fact, during his first year at Michigan State, Ike got homesick. And then now you burst on the scene at Michigan State. Like, I don't know, you had a zillion tackles like that.
I didn't even play my first year.
Right.
Well, here's the funny thing. You know what the funny thing is? After my first year there, I left.
You left?
I left after 2 or 3 weeks.
The program?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I got homesick.
Oh, wow. See, I didn't know this.
Yeah, I got homesick and was going to transfer to Cincinnati.
Wow.
Was going to transfer to Cincinnati. They still wanted me, but they couldn't put me on scholarship. So the deal was, if I transferred, I would have to pay my own way that first year. They would have helped me with loans and stuff like that, but I couldn't be on scholarship the first year because of the transferring rules, and I would have been ready to go the following year. But, man, I got home. I left school. Got home. By the time I got off that bus, I took a bus home. It was a 9-hour bus ride from East Lansing to Cincinnati. By the time I got off that bus, I knew I had made a mistake by leaving. I had a long time to think about the decision I was making. You know, right. Prior to making that decision, you know, my mother, she didn't really want me to leave. And everybody I had talked to about what I was going through emotionally or whatever, you know, they wanted me to stick it out and just stay there. And I was like, nah, I want to go home. I want to come home. And it was cool though. It was good for me that once I got home, I realized nothing had changed and everything was the same.
Right.
And so I'm like, dude, you're blowing an opportunity. So I wound up going back after a couple weeks. That's how I wound up redshirting my first year. I wasn't ready to play.
And then Nick Saban comes. And
right.
What was the plan like? Playing for Nick, like
Nick was hard to get used to in the beginning because, you know, George Perlis was known as a player's coach, and they felt like that was part of the problem. So they wanted to bring somebody in with a little more discipline behind them and that sort of thing. And so you know, he and I, we didn't necessarily bump heads, but because you have a guy that's a strong-minded as a Nick Saban, you know, he's not as easy to play for.
Right.
So, but you know,
but you had a nice 3 years under him.
Hell yeah. Somebody saw something.
He
helped make me to what I was as a player, without a doubt. I mean, without a doubt. If it wasn't, you know, he took something that was raw from an ability standpoint. The first year I played, I wound up leading the team in tackles, but that was just all off of just running around.
Right.
Just running around, chasing the football down.
So, you started learning the game at this point
a little bit. Nick helped teach me the game of football, so... by the time I left there, I knew football from a pupil standpoint. So, yeah, he helped turn me into an NFL player, man. He helped turn me into an NFL player.
And then round five, pick 142, 1998.
Yeah.
Philadelphia Eagles. Describe that situation, feeling, moment.
Oh, that was awesome. Listen, you know, I thought I should have been no worse than a third round draft pick coming out of school, but you know, going in the fifth round, I was still excited.
So are you disappointed by this point as a Jared?
A little bit. I think you are. I was prior to the Eagles calling me.
Okay.
So yeah,
you're at home with your family.
Yeah, at home watching it with the family and everything. So you know, with everybody's anticipation and everybody's excitement, with each pick that goes by, that's a little piece of you going by. That's a little bit more disappointment. So you watch that for 2 days, you know, it can be a little difficult emotionally to deal with. But I think by the time Jim Bowman, who was the Eagles tight ends coach, who was my offensive line coach at Michigan State, by the time he called and put Ray on the phone, Ray Rose on the phone, and they told me they were selecting me, all that stuff went away. It felt like I was the number one pick in the draft. So
what was your thoughts on the Eagles franchise? Or you didn't really have –
Oh, yeah.
Care,
no, I knew about the Eagles. Yeah. But when they called me, I was like, yeah, because they were one of the teams that I had in my little pool as to where I would like to go, because, A, they've always been known as a defensive team. So I wanted to play for a defensive team. And when I looked at linebackers in the league that were similarly built like I was, I knew I wanted to play in that system for those linebackers that play well. And William Thomas, was a guy that was a smaller linebacker, but was a playmaker. Interceptions, sacks, forced fumbles, all those things. I knew that prior to coming here. And I sat down and interviewed with the Eagles at the combine. So I knew with Emmett Thomas and Ray Rhodes that they kind of liked me through the interviewing process. And so when I knew it was them that was calling, I was excited. I was getting to come to play for a team that had Randall Cunningham, Reggie White, you know, Chris Carter, all those guys. Those are guys I grew up watching playing for the Eagles.
So when you get to Philly and the Eagles, like, who do you gravitate towards? Does anyone kind of take you under your wing, or are you learning on your own? Or
mostly linebackers.
Okay.
Mostly linebackers. William Thomas, Mike Caldwell, James Willis, those were the guys that were in my group. James Darling. I had a real good linebacker group. Me and Trotter came in the same year.
Right.
So he was our third-round pick, and I was our fifth-round pick. So, you know, we kind of went through our rookie year together,
right?
You know, from an off the field standpoint.
But that first training camp, it's kind of like, as a fifth round pick, it's kind of nerve wracking. Like you don't feel secure yet, do you?
No, you know what? With me, it was funny. I came in and, you know, you're obviously nervous because you're in training camp, but I got most of the nerves out from the mini camps back then. By the time we got to training camp, I knew it was, you know, you gotta, you know, you're gonna make this team. And it was good. They told me, you're gonna make this team by playing special teams. You know, we already got our starting linebackers, you know, James Willis, James Darling, William Thomas. You know, you're gonna make this team by playing special teams. And so you had better get next to John Harbaugh and stick to him. And that's what I did. That's what I did. Because I hadn't played special teams in college.
That's funny how that comes back.
Yeah. And I hadn't played special teams in college. Right. So I had to learn you know, how to be a good special teams player. But my first year, man, I embraced it, and I wanted to play. I wanted to suit up on game day, man. I didn't want to be wearing a sweatsuit on game day. And so
did you feel like you belonged right away, or was there like a moment?
Yeah, I did. I did. I came in as a little bit of an older rookie, so I didn't have the necessarily jitters of not feeling confident that I could play. Because all I figured is, as long as I know no one's tougher than I am, and as long as I feel like if I hit you, you're going down, I mean, it's pretty simple for me. You know what I mean? So, you know, that's the great thing about playing defense and being a linebacker, is that the tougher, you know, the guys who aren't afraid to stick their head in there and hit somebody, as long as you got some athleticism, and I always had athleticism and speed on my side. So they just want to know whether or not, with a slight frame, you know, will you stick your head in there and hit somebody?
Right.
And so once I did that, you know, we practiced with the Buffalo Bills my rookie year. Now,
98. I'm trying to think, 98 Bills. Yeah.
Going up against them and seeing those guys, I remember the first day, that was a little bit nerve-wracking when you see Bruce, what is Bruce's last name? Bruce Smith. When you see Bruce Smith, the Hall of Famer, Thurman Thomas, Andre Reed, you know, you see all these guys out there on the field. Doug Flutie, that was the first year Doug Flutie came back to the league. He was there, and Wade Phillips was their coach, I believe.
Was that Miracle in Meadowlands?
Miracle in the
not Meadowlands, Miracle at the Nashville the Titans thing, yeah.
Music City Miracle.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was that year. I think that was the year they made the playoffs and lost. And no, I think it was the following year. That was 99. But yeah, that rookie year was good. We stunk.
Right. Yeah.
As a team.
You basically, like, your career, so 98 to 2004 with the Eagles is like the trajectory of the team with Andy Donovan. You had the TO thing. I mean, 2004 was your coming out party, Pro Bowl, All Pro. Yeah. I mean,
I should have been in there the two previous years, but that's okay.
So I don't even know how to talk about, you know, your tenure in Philly, six seasons. I mean, you probably have countless stories and stuff. Seven seasons, is there like a moment that sticks out? Was that 04 season? Or
you know what? For me, I think as fun as the 04 season was, and obviously getting to the Super Bowl was fun, you know, the 2000 season was a blast for us as well. You know, the way the season started off with the onside kick in Dallas, that was the whole pickle juice game.
The Deuce game.
We're coming off of being 5-11 in Andy's first year. Donovan was going to be our starting quarterback from the beginning of the season. And we surprised a lot of teams by winning 11 games that year and making the playoffs. So that was a lot of fun because that was a team that had low expectations. And it was supposed to be the beginning or the next building block to the beginning of that new era. Making the playoffs that year was pretty cool. I think after that point, everything became sort of
trying. Expected.
Yeah, well, and you're trying to get to the winner championship. Right. So, you know, the even though we had good football teams all those years, sometimes those seasons get lost because of the way the season's ended. And, you know, when you got to get back on the horse and try to get back the next year, you know, that takes away from some of the stuff you done the year before. You don't get to remember it as fondly as you would had it ended, you know, with a Super Bowl ring, you know, like these guys did this past year. So it's really a shame. We won a lot of football games during that time, got a lot of great memories. But sometimes when you think about the way the season ended, it takes a little bit of the fun out of those seasons.
What was losing the Super Bowl like? Like, what was that emotional? I mean, I've played sports at a competitive level, but I can't imagine like getting to that point and coming. So, I mean, you guys played such a great game too.
Yeah, it hurt. It hurt. It didn't hurt as much as a couple of those conference championship losses hurt.
Okay.
But it certainly hurt. It certainly hurt. Felt like you kind of blew opportunities that you had. The one thing about that game, and when you think about those conference championship games, is that we never played our best game.
Right.
Like, we didn't lose by playing a good game in the other team. Like, you know how the Eagles just won the Super Bowl? Like, the Patriots played a good game. They played a good game. Tom Brady threw for over 500 yards, and the Eagles still won the game because they made the play in the end to win the game. You know, the Patriots, you can walk off the field holding your head pretty high. We left that field in Jacksonville, and I just felt like we left so many opportunities out there. I really felt like we were better than that Patriots team. Nobody ever talks about that, but I really felt like we were better than that Patriots team. We just didn't play at our best that game.
If I, look back on your career, is there, if you had to pick a play, is there a first play that comes to mind for you,
personally?
Is there, a standout play? Or I know you had a couple big interceptions.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's, a moment that you personally would think of.
Oh, man.
I'm putting you on the spot, but.
Yeah, you know.
There isn't. I don't know. Maybe it's college.
I had some pretty good ones. Getting a sack on Brett Favre in the 4th and 26 game was pretty cool. You know, that was right. That's a pretty cool moment. I like, you know, when you get a chance to make plays or be involved in plays that also involve some of the game's greatest players, you kind of cherish those a little more because, you know, I'm not one of those players. But I have memories of being involved in certain plays with some of those guys. So, you know, there are certain hits on Deion Sanders. You know, I got a couple good ones on Deion. One when he was with the Redskins, I made him fumble the ball. One when he was with the Ravens. Got to admit, he was 37, 38 years old when he was with the Ravens, though. But I hit him pretty good and flipped him over head over heels in that game.
All right, so I just wanted to see where your mind went. So there's the two good ones.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It's like if you get a dunk on Jordan or you get a dunk on LeBron, right? Yeah. I remember that play. Yeah. John Starks remembers dunking on Michael Jordan.
You finished your career 2 seasons in Atlanta.
Yeah.
That was when Vic was going crazy, right?
Yeah.
The
funny thing is that happened the year I got released.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
When he got in trouble, yeah.
So what was that time like? Did you like that in Atlanta?
I did enjoy my time in Atlanta, man. The only thing I regret about being in Atlanta is that, you know, I didn't have the type of impact on the team that I thought I could have. You know, when you go to a new team and they sort of bring you in as one of the guys that's supposed to be, a leader on the team or what have you. I thought I was getting there, but because it was only 2 years, I didn't feel like I got a chance to really do what they brought me there for. And I thought we were a good team. We just didn't know how to finish for whatever reason. You know, it's funny because both the years I was in Atlanta, 1 year we started off 6-2, we finished 8-8. The next year we started off 5-2, and we finished 7-9, I believe it was. That was the year Jim Mora got fired. And so Jim Mora Jr., and so,
did you think you still had more to give when they released you? Or
I did, but you know what? I didn't have the desire to prepare like I had in years past.
Right.
Like if I really wanted to play one more year, I could have played one more year. But I was just like, unless the right situation come up, like if the Eagles had to pick me up in 2007. Then I would have played because
right.
I had already bought a house. I had already had my house built back here over in Jersey. And so I was already planning on moving back up to this area. And so I didn't want to go through a bunch of workouts and tryouts and this. I didn't want to do that. And so if the Eagles had called me, you know, and said, do you still got anything left that you want to play? I would have played that year.
And then you transition into WIP and radio and Ike at Night. And,
yeah.
I mean, was that that must have been hard. How did that happen?
Now, that's nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Your own show.
Yeah, man.
Did someone ask you to
shout out to Andy Bloom.
Oh, okay. He approached you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was doing a bunch of part-time stuff through the fall of 2007.
Thinking, what the heck am I going
to
do?
Well, yeah. I was just trying to get my feet wet.
Okay.
You know, one thing I appreciated about WIP and some of our former bosses that I built up relationships while I was playing here. You know, I had been doing work with WIP while I was a player with different hosts, and I got to know upper management and program directors. And so they always told me.
You were calculated in doing
this?
Yeah,
okay. No doubt about it. It was something that I wanted to do. And not only with WIP, with some of the other local stations around here, whether it was CBS, whether it was Comcast, that is now NBC Sports, you know, I was doing that stuff while I was a player. I did interns. I did an internship in 2003 over at Comcast
in
the offseason. You know what I mean? Right. So, and then I had shows with other hosts throughout the season on Monday nights, the day after games, things of that nature while I was playing. So long story short, I knew what I wanted to do when I moved back up here. And it's funny because Tom Lee was the program director that I always knew when I played here. And he was the one I talked to, he and Mark Rayfield, who was our general manager at that time, when I was thinking about retiring and what I was going to do next. So I remember Mark telling me, you know, we love you, Ike. We can get you on air. I can put you on wherever I can. You know, we can't offer you anything full time right now, but you just need the reps. You need to get in. You need to get up here. You need the reps. I was still living in Atlanta then. And he was like, you know, I don't know if you can do it from Atlanta. So you need to move back here so that you can get the frequent reps. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did when I came up that summer. I think Tom Lee may have been here one more month when I got here because Andy Bloom came, I believe, in August of 2007, or it was in September, maybe one of those. And by the time we got through the fall of 2007 and we were heading into the spring of 2007, they made changes with some of the other shows, with the midday show. Steve Martorano was here. They moved him. And so Andy asked me, after I had been doing some night shows, right? Because first I was doing shows with other hosts on the weekends, Brian Satari, Rob Ellis. Once we got past the football season, Andy wanted to see if I could handle doing night shows, you know, 10 to 1, 11 to 2, that type of stuff. And I was like, sure. You know, I didn't, you know, I'm like, you know, the funny thing is I didn't say sure, now that I think about it. I remember sitting in his office and I'm like, are you sure? Are you sure? Like, you want me to do them by myself? And he was like, yeah, you know. He's like, eventually, you know, you gotta get the reps and, you know, you gotta be able to, you know, do the shows like this and you gotta have confidence to be able to do it.
He was Mike Brown asking you to play. It was the same thing.
Yeah.
Right?
So, you know, I was like,
all right,
if you think so. And so I did it and I did it not knowing how the hell it was gonna turn out. And from that, it went from that to the Ike at Night show, 7 to 11. I did that for a while. And
then you paired up with Howard.
And then I paired up with Howard after that. Yeah, I paired up with Howard for like two and a half years. I felt like that was another part of the initiation.
Yeah, right.
having to work with Howard in a day part. But I tell you what, it helped me from the standpoint of sharpening my skills at doing this and being able to be in a time slot like that with having so many people hear you, it got me over the whole fear.
Right.
What's it like doing drive, you know, evening or afternoon drive 3 to 7 right. on the radio?
So now now you're a grandfather of your own. You just had, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Few kids now. Your kids are getting older.
Yeah.
And you've been married for a while.
Yeah, now. Married. What year is this? 2018. Yeah. 16 years now. 16 years now, and got a couple kids, boy and a girl, Elijah and Jada. 10th grade, going into the 10th grade, and going into the 7th grade. Those two, my wife Renee. We've been knowing each other since Michigan State days. Since 1994, so that's 24 years of us being around each other. And then you mentioned me being a grandfather. My oldest son, who lives back in Cincinnati, Michael, just became a father last October, the day before my birthday, last October. So, and so he had a daughter. Yeah, that lets me know how old I'm.
Yeah. All your brothers still back in Ohio?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They all back in
Anyone
Ohio
else
with moms.
Involved in sports or just you?
No. They, you know what? You know, like most kids, you get to that high school level. Like most people don't realize, most people's athletic careers end in high school.
Right.
You know what I mean? No matter how good you are or what have you. So yeah, after high school, they didn't. I was the only one that was fortunate enough to play ball. At the high school, they weren't necessarily as good anyway. I mean, may tell you differently, but they weren't.
I know you guide and coach Elijah a lot.
Yeah.
Do you steer him away from football or towards football?
You know what? Towards football.
Okay.
You know, he just started playing last year. I didn't let him play football until ninth grade, 14 years old. So last year was his first year playing. You know, I just didn't think he was necessarily ready to play. And, you know, he's happy that he's playing high school now because now I can't coach him. You know what I mean? I coached him all the way up through Little League baseball and basketball and soccer and everything else. He was happy to get away from me.
Right. When I asked Ike Reese for a turning point in his life, it had nothing to do with football and it had nothing to do with school. It was something he did not expect, but something he made the best of and something he became a man from. I ask a lot of people this question. If you look back on your life, was there like a turning point or a moment where things changed, or like if you didn't do this one thing, or if this person didn't pop into your head? You mentioned Thompson.
Who, oh yeah, Eric Thomas.
Was,
yeah,
was that like the turning point for you? Maybe.
I guess. I think you can say that. That's a you know, it's funny because when you. I'm 44, so you're talking about that's a lot of turning points and different points of your life. But I think if I were to say what sort of at least got me on the right path, I'll say probably becoming a father at 18 years old, 17, 18 years old. You know what I mean? And so once you know you're going to be responsible for someone else, you know, it should put you into focus and should make you want to set goals for yourself. So I would even say my oldest son, at the point where I knew I had gotten my then girlfriend pregnant, I was like, yeah, we got to do something, man. We got to do something. do something better.
Right. And... luck, like how much do you think luck plays into a factor in all this? Like I ask a lot of people about this, but
luck?
Yeah, like luck versus skill and how you got here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, a lot of luck plays in it from that standpoint.
I guess it's less luck for you than some of these other media personalities, but.
Yeah, I guess so. But here's the thing I'll say. A lot of luck had to happen for me to even get to Michigan State. You know what I mean? Stay at Michigan State, make it through there, and then, you know, listen, I played with ball players that I would think were better players than I was, and they couldn't stay healthy, or they didn't get in the right situation to have a career in the NFL. So not only that, and if you take it one step further, having a career in the NFL, you know, it was lucky for me that I had coaches on this Eagle staff that had a history with me, that knew me. You know what I mean? Because when you fire a coach and you bring in a new guy, he's going to bring his own guys in. So you got to have someone that necessarily believes in you and sees something in you. And then I was lucky enough to have good teammates that like Troy Vincent, Brian Dawkins, you know, Bobby Taylor, these guys, Mike Caldwell, William Thomas. I had guys like that that helped me think about life after football and start planning for life after football. And so that allowed me to be here where I'm at now. Then I had to be fortunate enough to be around the people I work with in this business. You know, people ask me sometimes about what I'm most proud of in my life and my career. Obviously, outside of my kids and my family, what have you. When I think about just me personally, I think being able to do what I've been doing the past 10 years, sometimes I'm more proud and more satisfied than I did what I did with my athletic career. You know what I mean? Because I've been able to go from one thing I dreamed about doing my whole childhood to being able to do what I dreamed about doing my adulthood.
Last question, February 4th, 2018, like what was that feeling for you? I mean, I know how it feels for an Eagles fan, but for you, a player, you know, the Eagles do such a great job of keeping you guys in the organization involved. Yeah. I mean, you're on the float for the parade. What was that whole experience like?
Oh, man, it was awesome. It was awesome. You know, I'm pretty sure like a lot of Eagles fans shed a couple tears that night when that ball finally hit the ground and, you know, felt like the curse was sort of lifted off the city, off the team primarily, the Eagles organization. And, you know, I felt like the fans felt. This was, we won. We all won. We all get a little part of this. You know, we all get a little part of this. We all get to finally say the team that we root for the most and the team that has all of our hearts the most, we can say they're champions. They're world champions. We can finally sit at that world champion table, you know, with the rest of the Super Bowl championship cities and say, we got ours. We got one. So, you know, that was huge. That was big time, man. And they'll probably win another one at some point, but nothing will be like this one. Nothing will feel like this one felt.
Ike Reese, 94 WIP. Thanks for listening to Wired This Way. Please subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts. And thanks a lot to Eric the Turtle Golden, who helped produce the show. If you'd like to sponsor Wired This Way, please email me at andrew.porter@entercom.com. That's entercom.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.